Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hello there, Herman and Corin. So, as you guys know, I spent most of my career to date working, I guess you could say, in fields adjacent to technology. I probably need to tighten up that pitch a bit. I did marketing communications in-house at a series of technology companies in Ireland and then in Israel. Before drifting into the colorful world of freelance writing and tech documentation, and then finding my way through another strange career detour, but it was very interesting, into impact investing, which is actually really interesting because it was I worked for, you know, in-house, out-of-house, contract, large companies, startups, and this is the first time I'd really worked for a prolonged period with a person, which is a very interesting part of communications. And a couple of things that aren't on my resume, because, you know, we all have these false starts that didn't work out and we don't put them on. One was it was too short to list, my first summer in Israel working as a copy editor at the Jerusalem Post, which was a lot of fun, but that was before my first full-time job here. And the other one is a brief period where I was working at Freightos, which is a freight company. You can say that it didn't work out, and I moved on to do other things as my career, but for a couple of weeks I was learning all about the freight industry, and one of the things I learned about was Incoterms. So freight is fascinating because it's the backbone of the global economy. And we've talked about AliExpress and supply chains in different episodes. And that side of freight, air freight, is only from what I can recall. And Herman Poppleberry can, as always, correct me with the up-to-date data if it's changed. But air freight's actually a fairly small proportion of the global freight industry because it's significantly more expensive. The majority of packages, the story of freight is one beautiful story of consolidation. The box, it's fitting small boxes into larger boxes, consolidation and standardization. And these boxes not being random boxes, but of very specific sizes and dimensions so that they can fit into bigger boxes. So there's a lot of... I talked in a previous episode that I've become, sadly, a repeat mover during my rental experience, and I want to become really good at it. And probably the freight industry is a good place to take your lessons from. But Incoterms in freight is an interesting thing. And during my various adventures buying things into Israel from, we talked about AliExpress. Alibaba has always been an interesting one because you can try to purchase things directly from Alibaba. Alibaba is the business-to-business platform, for those who haven't heard of either. And then AliExpress is kind of its consumer sibling or spin-off. But Alibaba is the real deal. That's where B2B buyers get quotes. And it's a very, very different process than AliExpress, which is just you click and you buy. You send out an RFP. Then you get inundated with WhatsApps and emails from people responding, and then you can order something. But you don't order. The goods are preferred at a certain Incoterm, and the Incoterm is usually not door to door, which is of course what consumers are. And Incoterms are standardized contracts that define not only the place of delivery, but also the transfer of legal risk and responsibility between buyer and seller. So, you know, certain Incoterms will get to the port, and you have to do customs clearance. The other ones The seller does the customs clearance. Now, I know that these change frequently, and the last time I looked at anything related to Incoterms was probably 8 years ago, but they are really important, I know, in global commerce. So Herman and Corin, I'd love to chat about them today. I'd be very curious to know, I'm guessing that they came about, like most standardized things, through the messy situation when everybody comes up with things a little bit differently and enough chaos happens that people say, okay, we need to figure out a system for this. But they are very widely used, and probably everyone in B2B purchasing has some knowledge of them. So Herman and Corin would love to chat about Incoterms. When did they start? And for one who hasn't any familiarity with these things, if you were doing B2B purchasing, Herman Poppleberry might explain to us what the key Incoterms that we might want to know about and encounter mean.
All right, we are back for episode 3-on-1. I cannot believe we actually hit the 300 mark last week. It feels like we were just talking about those trusted platform module chips, and now we are onto a whole new century of episodes.
Herman Poppleberry here, and I am still riding that high from the milestone. But you know, life in Jerusalem does not slow down, and neither does our housemate Daniel. He was telling me over breakfast that he has been thinking about his time in the freight industry again.
It is funny how those brief career detours stay with you. Daniel sent us a really interesting prompt today about the backbone of global trade. He wants to talk about Incoterms. Specifically, where they came from and what someone in business-to-business purchasing actually needs to know about them.
Oh, I love this topic. It sounds dry on the surface, like looking at a spreadsheet of shipping rates, but Incoterms are actually the secret language of the world. If you do not speak it, you are basically flying blind in the world of international commerce. They are the protocols that keep the global supply chain from collapsing into a pile of lawsuits.
It is like the grammar of a contract, right? Without it, you are just throwing words at a wall and hoping the cargo shows up at the right port without a massive bill attached to it. So, let us start at the beginning for those who might not be in the logistics world. What exactly is an Incoterm?
So, Incoterm is actually a trademarked acronym. It stands for International Commercial Terms. They are a set of rules published by the International Chamber of Commerce, or the ICC. Their whole purpose is to clearly define the responsibilities of sellers and buyers for the delivery of goods under sales contracts.
And when we say responsibilities, we are not just talking about who pays the shipping bill. We are talking about the moment the risk transfers from one person to another. That is a huge distinction that I think people miss.
Exactly. It is about three big things: costs, risks, and obligations. Who pays for the freight? Who is responsible if the ship sinks or the container falls off a crane? And who handles the customs paperwork? If you do not have a standardized way to say that, every single contract would need 50 pages of fine print just to explain how a box gets from point A to point B.
Daniel asked about the history of this. I imagine this was born out of some serious chaos. I mean, shipping has been around since we were carving canoes out of logs, but when did we actually sit down and say, okay, we need a manual for this?
It was exactly as Daniel suspected. It was born out of a messy, chaotic situation. Before the ICC stepped in, different countries had their own interpretations of trade terms. You might use a term in London that meant something completely different in New York or Marseille. By the early 1900s, as global trade started to explode, the legal disputes were becoming a nightmare.
I can only imagine. One guy thinks he is done once the goods are on the dock. The other guy thinks he is getting them delivered to his warehouse. And meanwhile, the goods are sitting in the rain getting ruined while they argue about it.
That is exactly what happened. So, in 1923, the ICC commissioned a study to look at the trade terms used in 13 different countries. They realized the discrepancies were massive. It took them another 13 years of debating and drafting, but in 1936, they published the first set of Incoterms. There were only 6 terms back then.
1936. That is a long time ago. I assume they have changed a bit since then.
Oh, definitely. They have updated them about every 10 years to keep up with how we actually move stuff. Think about it. In 1936, there were no shipping containers. Everything was break bulk, which meant people were literally carrying sacks and crates onto ships by hand.
Right. And now we have massive automated ports and air freight that can move things across the globe in less than 24 hours.
Exactly. We had major updates in 1953, 1967, 1976, and so on. The current version we use is InCoderms 2020. That is the gold standard right now. And it is important for our listeners to realize that even though we are in January of 2026, the 2020 rules are still the active ones. They do not expire every year. The ICC usually works on a decadal cycle.
So if I'm in business-to-business purchasing today, I'm looking at the 2020 rules. Now, there is a lot of alphabet soup here. Three-letter acronyms everywhere. EXW, FOB, DDP, it can be overwhelming. If I'm a buyer, where do I even start?
Well, the best way to visualize it is as a spectrum. On one far end, the seller does almost nothing. On the other far end, the seller does absolutely everything. Let us start with the one that is the easiest for the seller but the hardest for the buyer. That is EXW or Ex-Works.
Ex-Works. That sounds like the seller is basically saying, "Here's the stuff. It is sitting on my loading dock. Good luck getting it home."
That is exactly what it is. Under Ex-Works, the seller's only responsibility is to make the goods available at their own premises. They do not even have to load them onto the truck. The buyer is responsible for everything from that moment on. They pay for the truck, they handle the export customs, they pay for the ocean or air freight, and they handle the import at the other end.
That sounds like a lot of risk for the buyer. Why would anyone agree to that?
Usually, it is because the buyer has a really sophisticated logistics network and they think they can do it cheaper than the seller. Or maybe the seller is a very small company that just does not want to deal with the headache of international shipping. But for a lot of buyers, Ex-Works is a trap because you are responsible for export formalities in a foreign country where you might not even have a legal presence. You are essentially acting as the exporter in a country where you do not live.
That makes sense. It is like trying to file taxes in a country where you do not speak the language. So, what is the next step up on that spectrum?
The next big one, and probably one of the most common, is FCA, or Free Carrier. This is a lot more flexible. Under FCA, the seller is responsible for delivering the goods to a carrier named by the buyer. Crucially, the seller also handles the export clearance.
Okay, so the seller at least gets the goods out of their own country legally. That seems like a big relief for the buyer.
It is. And FCA is great because it can be used for any mode of transport. You can use it for air, rail, road, or sea. This is actually what the ICC recommends instead of the famous FOB for most modern shipments. In the 2020 update, they even added a provision for FCA that allows the buyer to instruct the carrier to issue a bill of lading with an onboard notation to the seller, which helps with getting paid via letters of credit.
Wait, you mentioned FOB. That is free on board, right? That is the one everyone knows. Why is that not the go-to anymore?
This is a classic point of confusion. FOB is only for sea or inland waterway transport. You cannot technically have an FOB air shipment, even though people say it all the time. Under FOB, the seller's responsibility ends only when the goods are actually on board the vessel.
Ah, I see. So if the crane drops the container while it is hanging over the ship, but before it touches the deck, who is responsible?
Under the old rules, it was the ship's rail. If it crossed the rail, it was the buyer's problem, but in the newer versions, it is when it is placed on board. It is a subtle but important distinction. But here is the problem with FOB for container shipments. Most of the time, a seller delivers a container to a terminal, not directly onto a ship. It might sit in the terminal for 3 days before it gets loaded.
And if something happens in those 3 days, there is a legal gray area because the goods are not on board yet.
Precisely. That is why, for containerized cargo, we always tell people to use FCA instead of FOB. It protects the seller because their risk ends when they hand it over to the terminal, and it is clearer for the buyer.
That is a great tip. I bet a lot of business-to-business buyers are still writing FOB on their contracts out of habit.
Oh, absolutely. It is a hard habit to break. Now, let us move into the middle of the spectrum. These are the C terms, CFR, CIF, CPT, and CIP. This is where it gets a little tricky because the point where the cost transfers is different from the point where the risk transfers.
Wait, that sounds like a contradiction. How can I be paying for the shipping but not be responsible for the risk?
It sounds weird, but it is actually very common. Let us take CIF, which is cost, insurance, and freight. This is another maritime-only term. The seller pays for the freight and the insurance to get the goods to the destination port. However, the risk actually transfers to the buyer the moment the goods are on board the ship at the starting port.
So, if I am the buyer, I am paying for the goods. The seller is paying to ship them. But if the ship hits an iceberg in the middle of the ocean, it is my problem.
Yes, but because it is CIF, the seller was required to buy insurance on your behalf, so you would make a claim against that insurance. The reason this exists is to give the buyer peace of mind that the goods are paid for and insured all the way to their home port, but the seller does not want to be responsible for what happens in the middle of the Atlantic.
That is fascinating. It is like a handoff that happens in slow motion. What about the non-maritime version of that?
That would be CIP, or carriage and insurance paid too. It is basically the same thing, but for any mode of transport. One big change in the 2020 rules was that for CIP, the seller is now required to buy a much higher level of insurance coverage than they used to. They have to buy what is called Clause A coverage, which is basically all risk. For CIF, they only have to buy Clause C, which is the bare minimum.
That seems like a win for the buyer.
It definitely is. It reflects the reality that most manufactured goods today are high value and people want better protection.
Okay, so we have covered the seller doing a little and the seller doing a medium amount. Now we get to the heavy hitters, the D terms. This is where the seller is basically doing the heavy lifting, right?
Exactly. These are the arrival terms. The first one is DAP, or delivered at place. The seller takes on all the costs and risks to get the goods to a specific location, like the buyer's warehouse. But, and this is a big but, the buyer is responsible for unloading the truck and handling the import customs.
So the truck shows up at my door, and I have to have the forklift ready and the customs cleared, or that truck is just going to sit there and charge me a fortune in waiting fees.
You got it. And then there is the one that changed names in 2020. It used to be called DAT, for delivered at terminal. Now it is DPU, which stands for delivered at place unloaded.
Why the name change? Was it just to make it more confusing?
Actually, it was to make it more flexible. DAT implied it had to be a maritime terminal or a bus station or something. DPU means it can be any place, but the seller is the one who has to unload the goods. It is the only encoderm where the seller is responsible for unloading.
I can see how that would be useful if you are buying something massive, like a piece of industrial machinery, and you do not have the equipment to get it off the truck yourself. You want the seller to bring their own crane and finish the job.
Exactly. It is a very specific niche, but it is important to have a term for it. And finally, we reach the ultimate service level, DDP, delivered duty paid.
This is the dream for a buyer, right? It is like ordering something on Amazon. It just shows up at your door. Everything is paid for, no surprises.
On the surface, yes. The seller handles everything. Freight, insurance, export customs, and even the import duties and taxes in the buyer's country. For a buyer, it is the lowest risk option. But for a seller, it is a nightmare. They are responsible for following tax laws and customs regulations in a country where they might not even be registered.
I have heard of shipments getting stuck for months because a seller tried to do DDP, but did not realize they needed a specific tax ID in the destination country.
That happens all the time. In fact, many freight forwarders will advise their clients to avoid DDP if they can, simply because the potential for a bureaucratic disaster is so high. As a buyer, you might think you are getting a great deal. But if your goods are seized by customs because the seller messed up the paperwork, you are still the one without the product you need for your business. Also, Herman's pro tip, Incoterms do not cover the transfer of title or ownership. That is a separate clause in your contract.
That is a huge point. So, you could technically be responsible for the risk of the goods, even if you do not legally own them yet?
Exactly. Incoterms are about delivery, not ownership.
So, looking at this from a business-to-business purchasing perspective, there is no one-size-fits-all answer. It really depends on your company's capabilities.
Exactly. If you have a great logistics team in-house, you probably want more control, so you might go with FCA or EXW. You can negotiate your own rates, and you know exactly where your stuff is. If you are a smaller operation and you just want the goods to show up, you might lean toward the C terms, or DAP.
One thing that always strikes me is the importance of the named place. You cannot just say FOB. You have to say FOB, Port of Shanghai, Incoterms 2020.
Oh, Korn, you are hitting on the number one mistake people make. If you do not specify the exact point, the whole term becomes useless. I once saw a contract that just said DAP London. London is a big place. Does that mean a specific warehouse in Croydon? Does it mean a terminal at Heathrow? If the truck goes to the wrong place, who pays for the extra 50 miles?
It is like giving someone directions, but only telling them the city and not the street address. You are just asking for trouble.
And you have to specify the year. If you do not write Incoterms 2020, you might be accidentally using the rules from 1990, which have different definitions for some of these terms. Most courts will default to the most recent version, but you do not want to leave that up to a judge.
So, for someone starting out in business-to-business purchasing, what are the top three things they should keep in mind when they are looking at these terms in a quote?
First, understand where the risk transfers, not just the cost, the risk. If that container falls into the ocean, do you still have to pay the seller? Under most terms, the answer is yes.
That is a scary thought. You are paying for a pile of wet electronics at the bottom of the sea.
Exactly. That leads to my second point. Insurance. If the term does not explicitly require the seller to buy it, like CIF or CIP do, then you as the buyer absolutely must buy it yourself. Never assume the other guy has you covered.
And third?
Match the term to the transport. Do not use FOB for air freight. Do not use FAS, which is free alongside ship, for a truck delivery. Use FCA for almost everything that involves containers or multiple modes of transport. It is the most robust and modern term we have.
This is making me think back to our episode on the agentic mesh, episode 218. We talked about how AI agents might eventually handle these negotiations. I imagine an A. I would be much better at picking the right Incoterm than a human who is just copying and pasting from an old contract.
Oh, absolutely. And A, I would look at the specific port, the current customs backlog, the insurance rates, and the buyer's tax status and say, actually, for this specific shipment, you should use CPT instead of DAP. It would take all that complexity and optimize it. But until we have that, we have to rely on our own knowledge.
It is also interesting to think about the environmental impact. We talked about supply chains in episode 297. Does the choice of Incoterm affect the carbon footprint?
Indirectly, yes. If a buyer uses a term like X Works, they might consolidate their shipments from five different sellers into one big container, which is much more efficient. If every seller is doing their own DDP shipment, you might have five half-empty trucks driving to the SIG destination.
That is a great second-order effect I had not thought of. Efficiency often follows control. If you control the logistics, you can make them greener.
Exactly. Now, I want to go back to something Daniel mentioned in his prompt about the box. He talked about the beautiful story of consolidation and standardization. Incoterms are the linguistic version of the shipping container. The containers standardize the physical dimensions of trade, and Incotermen standardize the legal dimensions.
That is a perfect analogy. Without the box, you cannot have the crane. Without the Incoterm, you cannot have the contract.
And just like the box, they are constantly evolving. There is already talk about what the 2030 rules might look like. People are asking if we need terms that specifically address digital goods or carbon credits.
That would be a huge shift. How do you define delivery for a piece of software that is being hosted on a server in three different countries simultaneously?
Right? Does the risk transfer when the download starts or when it finishes? It sounds silly, but when you are talking about a $1 million enterprise software license, those seconds matter.
This has been a really deep dive into something that most people probably ignore until it goes wrong. But for our listeners in the business world, this is survival gear.
It really is. And I think it is a great reminder that the world works because of these invisible standards. Whether it is the TPM chips we talked about in episode 300 or the C2PA standards from episode 298, we are constantly building these layers of trust so that we can interact with people on the other side of the planet.
It is about reducing friction. The less time we spend arguing about who pays for the crane, the more time we can spend actually building things and creating value.
Well said. I think we have given Daniel and our listeners a pretty solid foundation here. From the 1936 originals to the 2020 updates, Incoterms are the silent partners in every international deal.
Definitely. And before we wrap up, I want to take a second to talk to our listeners. We have been doing this for over 300 episodes now, and the reason we keep going is because of the incredible engagement we get from you all. If you are finding these deep dives helpful, please take a moment to leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify.
It really does help. It lets the algorithms know that people actually want to hear about the history of international trade terms and technical hardware security. It helps us reach more curious minds like yours.
And if you have a question that pops into your head at an inconvenient moment, just like Daniel does, you can send it to us through the contact form at our website, myweirdprompts.com. You can also find our full archive and RSS feed there.
I am already looking forward to whatever Daniel throws at us next week. Maybe something about the thermodynamics of air conditioning or the history of the paperclip?
Knowing him, it will be something we never saw coming. But that is the fun of it.
Absolutely. Well, this has been My Weird Props. I am Herman Poppleberry.
And I am Korn. Thanks for diving down the rabbit hole with us. We will see you in the next one.
Until next time, keep asking those weird questions.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.